Hey there, and welcome back to the Knowledge Base Podcast. I'm Kate, your host. Today I'm talking with eMoney's Matt Rogers on a feature of the application that many of you are probably pretty familiar with, Monte Carlo. Matt is a senior advisory consultant of financial planning, product development, and research. He works very closely with Monte Carlo and has so much to share, from tips and tricks on how to best use it for your clients, as well as information on what a good or not so good Monte Carlo score looks like and how it's calculated in our system. I'll leave the rest to Matt. Here's our conversation.
Please be advised that this podcast contains purely educational information and nothing discussed may be construed as legal, tax, or financial advice. Please consult a financial advisor for any financial investment or money management questions. All views or opinions represented in this podcast are solely the opinion of the speaker and do not represent those of eMoney Advisor LLC or any of its affiliates.
Hey, Matt, thanks so much for joining the podcast today. It's great to have you on. Can you start by telling our listeners who you are and what you do here at eMoney?
Yeah, sure. I am a senior advisory, within the financial planning group. And the financial planning group is about a dozen or so people who are mostly CFPs, a CFA. And we help multiple teams at eMoney. In my case, and a few other cases, we help the product team. So when we're building new features, we make sure that the feature is meeting what our users asked for, make sure it's working correctly. We have sort of the same language as our users do. We can talk, personal finance. So we help translate what our users want versus what our engineers code and make sure it's all fitting together nicely. So that's the general role of the financial planning group in terms of what myself and a few of the people do.
That's great. Yeah, I think the financial planning group is such a key part of eMoney, and especially having those CFPs, those CFAs who just know so much. So I'm happy to give some people some background today on that. And obviously, we're going to be talking a lot about Monte Carlo analysis today, really diving into that part of the application. So while we're not going to cover too much of the Monte Carlo basics or kind of point and click instructions, I do really want to give listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with that part of the application a background before we really dive into things. So can you give listeners just a high level overview of Monte Carlo in eMoney?
I would say sort of the old school, planning, ability, because of technology's changed a lot, right? But old school was, hey, let's take your current net worth and let's assume it grows by 5% every single year. And if it does that, based on your desired living expenses, will your money last or won't it last? It's very binary, yes or no. Your money makes it or it doesn't. But that's assuming, you make 5% as an example every single year. Of course, nobody makes 5% every single year. So that's where the old school sort of operated. And there's nothing wrong with that. The idea is that over time, you'll average a certain number, say 5%. But Monte Carlo says, well, no one does 5% every year. Let's be more realistic. Let's assume you might average 5%, but every single year, rates will fluctuate, and they can fluctuate in any number of ways, really good years, really bad years, somewhat good, somewhat bad. And so you have more of a real world experience, so to speak, in each trial. And we do 1,000 trials. So we give you 1,000 fake lifetimes, and we randomize rates. And some years you make no money, you lose money on the market. Some years you make great money. And so some of the trials end up being really good. Some end up being really bad. Only a few. A lot of them end, because of mathematics, a lot of them end up being around that 5% in my example, that 5% average number over a 30 or 40 year span, those randomized rates will average about 5% or maybe 6 or maybe 4, but in a relatively small ballpark. And a few of those 1,000 trials might be really lucky or really unlucky and be like earning 8% on average or 1% or negative. So it's just a way of doing more of a real world experience where rates fluctuate. And of course, any one trial is not going to be correct, but that's why you do 1,000 trials. So over 1,000 trials, some are unlucky, some are lucky, most are in the middle of moderately lucky or moderately unlucky, and we'll find out how many trials succeed and how many trials fail. And that refers to whether you run out of money or not. So that's kind of the idea of Monte Carlo, is to match real world fluctuations, and you do it 1,000 times in our case, and you figure out what the odds are that your money will last until your lifetime is over.
It's so important to really give the client that look at what that real world experience or real world fluctuation could look like, because I think that sometimes that's hard to imagine. And there is so much in the financial world that's just unpredictable in terms of your money going up or down. Is there a specific score that the client should be striving for when they're looking at this with the advisor? And if so, what is that?
Great question. People, this is all my opinion. People tend to go back to their school years, right? Where you're graded on a 100% scale, which is what Monte Carlo does, right? If all the 1,000 trials succeed, it's 100%. If half of them succeed, it's 50. And so people go back to the whole, or as a parent, if my child comes home with a 75 on the history class or the math class, I'm not too happy with a 75. I mean, 85 is a lot better and 100 would be ideal. That's not true with Monte Carlo. In my opinion, 100% means that if you've made your finances such that you've accounted for every single possible bad luck probability, years and years and years of bad returns, that's so unlikely to happen. But yet you've already accounted for that. You probably are oversaving and underspending. Go enjoy your life some more. Save a bit less, go have an extra vacation, splurge. So I think 100%, unlike when you're in school, 100% is not, I think, an appropriate score, my opinion, right? We have partners, any money, who strive for 90. Okay, good. That leaves some, like, you're not trying to solve every problem right now. But I would even argue my bias is towards 80, 75 to 80. That's my personal bias, and that leaves you in a very strong plan. Odds are that your financial plan will work out fine. But if possibly you're in that 20% area where you got unlucky, you can take corrective action, at that time. There's no need to solve every problem right now. You can solve some problems later on in your lifetime. And there's even commentators who will say 50% is the right score, for the same reason I just said. Well, you have a 1 in 2 chance of being totally fine. And if your actual life looks like one of those, 50% unlucky situations, take some planning actions at that point in time. I think that might be a bit on the other side of the equation, too low. So I'm not a big fan of 100. I'm not a big fan of 50. I'm in the 75 to 80, low 80s range as to what you want to shoot for. That's a really solid score. It means you've done well. But it also means that, there's a 20% chance you might be in that unlucky category and just returns don't work out in your favor. But you have, if you're 50, 60 years old, you have 20 or 30 years to sort of realize, shoot, I'm getting unlucky. Let's make some changes to our plan now. So you don't have to solve every problem right now and shoot for 100% score. That's a great question. And I think people would do well to shoot for that upper 70s, low 80s area. But that's my opinion, and they could differ. Other folks can differ. That's the beauty of Monte Carlo. The beauty of Monte Carlo, though, is the results are sort of interpretive as the kind of personality you are. That's the beauty of it all.
And that's the funny thing is, as you're talking, I'm thinking about how, like, in school growing up, I was always the type of kid who a 93 was never good enough.
Oh, boy.
Like, yeah. 100% was the best that you could do. And then, and that's without any extra credit. And so I think it's interesting because I'm sure a lot of advisors run into those clients who are really hung up on that score of, oh, you want to see it above that 75 to 80 range. So if you are seeing a, you know, the, let's say you are seeing that 75 to 80 range or even higher, is that how the system would maybe define a success or failure? How exactly would the system define maybe both a success and a failure kind of within e-money for that client?
Well, so number one, you know, back when you were in sixth grade, right, if you had that 78% score, you didn't have a chance the next year to make it any better. Sixth grade came and went and you were a 78% kid. But the beautiful thing with financial planning is you're 68 years old and your score is whatever it is. You have next year and the next year and the next year to improve it. And so that's the big difference, right? It's not you know, you're in sixth grade and your score is your score. And now your resume says you're a sixth grade, 75% kid. So that's the big difference, right? We have a lifetime to improve our score. Not that you should be too blasé about that. A bad score is a bad score. Don't get me wrong, but there's time to change things. And so acknowledge that. So back to your, other question of success or fit. So differentiate two things, right? There's 1,000 trials and each trial is going to be successful or unsuccessful based on whether your money lasts in that trial. And then the question becomes how many of 1,000 were successful? Oh, 600 were successful. That means it's a 60% score. Is that a successful score? Again, it's interpretive. I would say if it was my client, we're doing okay, but we want to improve that. If it's 80% or 83%, I'd be like, you're doing great. You're in a great situation. There's no need to change the situation here. But of course, we always watch things, right? 2008 happens and we lose a third of our money, right? And then we react after 2008. We don't try to predict 2008 when the market crashed and build that into our plan. We kind of react after that. So I would say the definition of success is at the 1,000 trial level. Each trial has a clear definition, which is if money lasts, then it's successful. If the money runs out, it's a failed trial. But then the overall score is a bit more interpretive. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It definitely does. I think it puts it into very clear terms for listeners, because I think that that's really important for them to understand. You know, if you have a certain percentage of trials that are considered successful where the money is lasting, then that's what's kind of letting you have that score or feeding into that score.
Exactly. And then you don't need to have every trial, all 1,000 make it. You can have some fail and just know that those are outliers and you and your advisor will team up accordingly and figure those. If your life looks like one of those bad trials, you and your advisor will figure things out as time goes on.
The driving force behind Monte Carlo as a whole is investment assumptions. It's in investment assumptions. Mm-hmm. Tell our advisors a little bit about the assumptions. You know, how can they view these? What can be changed? Can they be changed? Just give them some insight into that part of the application that really powers up Monte Carlo.
Yeah, sure. So I'll back up one step. So when we do 1,000 trials, those trials are all consistent in that, you know, your clients have the same income. $150,000 a year for her and $100,000 for him or whatever. That's all consistent. And so the structure of each trial is the same as far as, you know, what they make, what they spend. What changes is the rates of return, because in the real world, your income is pretty stable, you know, but the returns, you have no control over the returns. That's what changes. And so to control how much those returns change, in our fact finder, you go to the assumptions area, and then you go to a sub area called investment assumptions. And in there, you'll see all of our asset classes. And for each asset class, there is rates of return. and there's a standard deviation, and not to get too mathy here, but basically it's just a matter of the standard deviation is the amount of variance around that return that you entered. So I think I mentioned 5% as an example earlier, right? And so there's 5% as an average return, but what if the variance is huge versus what if the variance is very small? So a 5% return that's randomized with a very small variance might range from 5.5 to 4.5, pretty small variance. But a 5% return with a large variance might go as high as 8 or 9 on those, lucky randomized years, or might go down to minus, 1 on those unlucky years. And take stock asset classes, large cap, small cap, especially small cap. They tend to have higher returns, but much higher variance. So if you look at our randomization of small cap returns in our system, you might have years where the small cap holdings get a minus 18%, and you'll have years where they get positive 22%. You'll have a lot of years where you get 2 to 15%, right? But you'll get those positive 18s and those negative 22s. You'll get them, but you won't get those with like a bond asset class where the deviation, the variance is much tighter. So it's just a matter of, you can go in there based on who you are. Our basic construct is you can control your own assumptions, but some of our partners don't allow that. And so based on who you are, you probably, but maybe not, have the ability to define the rates of return and how much variance they get. And again, like usually stocks and international stocks and small cap stocks, they'll have the big variance. And that's where the whole idea of Monte Carlo kicks in. It's like, yeah, you're not going to get 5, 5, 5, 5, 5 every year. You're going to get a pretty wide variance. And so that creates a range of results, not a singular result, but a range of results. And then we just tell you, hey, here's your range of results. 65% of the time you made it, 35% you didn't, or whatever it may be. But we report on the range of results, unlike 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, where at the end of the day, you either make it or you don't. There's only two results. There's no range when you make 5% every single year.
I love what you said about how, depending on who you are, you can really kind of go in and define the rates of return, because I think that really shows just the level of customization that advisors can utilize throughout e-money for their clients. And what's good for one advisor might not be the same for the other advisor. So I really love that they can really kind of go in and define those rates of return.
Yes. And to your point, like, I think it's more the advisor opinion. Is the advisor, more optimistic or more pessimistic on what to expect to happen, or how cautious do they want to be in their assumptions? So at that level, it's probably more of an advisor opinion as to what a stock return might be and how much variance there might be. It's probably more at the advisor level. But to your point, right? If I'm an advisor and I have 100 clients, I might know that a couple of my clients are very, very cautious people. I may tend to make different assumptions with them, possibly. But to your point, it's mostly an advisor level, opinion as to what the market's expectation might be.
I think that's great context to give advisors, especially if they're not too familiar. While we don't really cover the point and click, as I mentioned before, but we might have some listeners who are not as familiar with Monte Carlo or being able to define rates of return. So I think it's great to really give them that context. E-money really supports both Monte Carlo and straight line cash flow analysis. So can you give some guidance to our listeners on when it's best to use one versus the other?
I would say for the most part, with the overall plan result, and when you factor everything in, your kids are going to college, you want to retire at 65. When you want to get a whole plan analysis, you're probably either one or the other at the advisor level. Your mentality is, I like Monte Carlo. It gives me a range of results. It mimics the market and its variability. I don't like doing 5-5-5-5-5. I keep using the example, but you get it. So it's one or the other, right? I think for the most part, it's not a case of client A is Monte Carlo and client B is straight line. I think it's a advisor level personal decision as to how they want to do their planning. With that said, I will say, even for the people who do Monte Carlo as their preferred, and that's the growing trend. You know, I got in this business 25 years ago, and Monte Carlo is just a corner of an idea. And now it's the driving factor of what most people do for their planning for their clients. So it's become it's become unique to like the main thing. But that said, though, there's nothing wrong inherently with doing straight line. It's just a matter of how you want to approach it. But even if you are a Monte Carlo person, here's an interesting thing I love talking to people about. Individual goals. And I think the great example is college. And you open a 529 for your son or daughter, and you start saving into it, and they're 3 years old. And you ask your advisor, what are the odds I'll meet this goal of, and right now, crazily enough, a lot of schools are $70,000, right? So we're talking, you know, $300,000 or more. What are the odds I can meet this $300,000 goal in 15, 16, 17 years, you know, if I save X amount per month into my 529? A lot of times what you'll find is if you define like we do, and I think most people do, if you define success as paying for the full goal as a success and not paying for the full goal as a failure, then you may have a 0% Monte Carlo score. And that sends shockwaves down the client's spine, right? Oh my God, 0%, I'm a bad parent. No, all that means is there's 1,000 trials and none of them paid the $300,000, you know, over 4 years, 70 grand a year, whatever. None of them paid the full amount, but they all paid a nice hunk of it. Maybe the unlucky ones paid 2 years. The lucky ones paid 3.5 years. The average ones paid 3 of the 4 years. So as a Monte Carlo score, you got a big fat zero goose egg. But if you look at it more holistically and say, yeah, but I paid at a minimum, even unlucky, I paid half my kid's college. And even if I got average luck, I paid for 3/4. And then extra 1 year, I can do a home equity loan. I can live a little tighter for a year or two. My child could get a job. There's all kinds of solutions to that fourth year. Do not feel like you're a failure because your Monte Carlo score on your college goal was zero, when in reality, it was actually pretty darn good. Yeah, you never got the whole entire 300 grand funded. Or maybe you get a 5% was successful. Great, 5%, whoopee, I still feel badly. But the fact is that you the other ones, the other 95%, you paid for a ton of college. So be happy, be proud, and then just know that there's other solutions to that missing year. Other money can be used or whatever. So that I do think there's a cautiousness there when you do some certain very discrete goals like college. It could be misleading to say that if you don't pay the whole entire goal, you're a failure. That's not true at all. And so I would warn people about that. That's where a straight line might be a little bit more, or you do both of them, right? You say, hey, odds are you're not going to pay for the whole entire thing. But it looks like on straight line, odds are you're paying for 3/4 of it, or darn close to 3/4 of it. So that's a great example of where maybe a little bit of both works out, right? Monte Carlo score gives you an answer, but then straight line gives you better context to that answer. So I would say that's a good example of where maybe straight line should always be used. But in general, for the whole entire plan, it's usually the advisor personal preference. But did that college example make sense as to how Monte Carlo could give you a one takeaway, but then straight line gives you a different takeaway, and both are true?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that, I mean, that once again just goes back to supporting that customization, personalization component of e-money, because it's going to be what works for the advisor. And as they look at their clients and the different components at play and talking through that with their clients, they know their clients best. There's never in anything financial planning, there's never one factor. The answer is always, it depends. And it's just never one complete factor or some simple cookie cutter answer. There are always so many layers because every client and their situation or every advisor and their viewpoint is just so different from the next.
And we try to accommodate with flexibility in that you can look at a goal from a Monte Carlo perspective, then also look at it from a straight line perspective and find that happy marriage of like, which one tells the story better, or do both of them combined tell the story better? But we give you those options as to how to handle it as far as straight line or Monte Carlo. So yeah, you're exactly correct.
Conversation so good we're splitting it in two. That's all for this episode of the Knowledge Base Podcast. Part two of my conversation with Matt on everything Monte Carlo is just around the corner. Until then, check out all of our Monte Carlo resources in the help menu, and we'll catch you on another episode soon.